So let's open this morning at Genesis 29. I'm going to go back just to read a couple of verses for context. I'm going to read all the way through, and then we'll exposit it. So 29, verse 31. When the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben, for she said, "Because the Lord has looked upon my affliction, for now my husband will love me." She conceived again and bore a son and said, "Because the Lord has heard that I'm hated, he's given me this son also." And she called his name Simeon. Again, she conceived and bore a son and said, "Now this time my husband will be attached to me because I've borne him three sons." Therefore, his name was called Levi. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, "This time I will praise the Lord." And therefore, she called his name Judah. Then she ceased bearing. When Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she envied her sister. She said to Jacob, "Give me children or I shall die." Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, "Am I in the place of God? God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" And then she said, "Here's my servant Bilhah. Go into her so that she may give birth on my behalf, that even I may have children through her." So she gave him her servant Bilhah as a wife, and Jacob went into her. And Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, "God has judged me and has also heard my voice and given me a son." Therefore, she called his name Dan. Rachel's servant Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. Then Rachel said, "With mighty wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister and have prevailed." And so she called his name Naphtali. When Leah saw that she had ceased bearing children, she took her servant Zilpah and gave her to Jacob as a wife. Then Leah's servant Zilpah bore Jacob a son, and Leah said, "Good fortune has come," and so she called his name Gad. Leah's servant Zilpah bore Jacob a second son, and Leah said, "Happy am I, for women have called me happy," for she called his name Asher. In the days of wheat harvest, Reuben went out and found mandrakes in the field, and he brought them to his mother, Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes." But she said to her, "Is it a small matter that you've taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also?" Rachel said, "Well, then he may lie with you tonight in exchange for your son's mandrakes." When Jacob came from the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, "You must come in to me, for I have hired you with my son's mandrakes." So he lay with her that night. God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. Leah said, "God has given me my wages because I gave my servant to my husband." So she called his name Issachar. And Leah conceived again, and she bore Jacob a sixth son. Then Leah said, "God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will honor me because I have borne him six sons." And so she called his name Zebulun. Afterward, she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. She conceived and bore a son and said, "God has taken away my reproach." And she called his name Joseph, saying, "May the Lord add to me another son." As soon as Rachel had borne Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my own home and country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, that I may go, for you know the service that I have given you." But Laban said to him, "If I have found favor in your sight, I've learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you. Name your wages and I will give it." Jacob said to him, "You yourself know how I have served you and how your livestock has fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased abundantly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also?" And he said, "What shall I give you?" Jacob said, "You shall not give me anything. If you will do this for me, I will again pasture your flock and keep it. Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from it every speckled and spotted sheep and every black lamb and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and they shall be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later when you come to look into my wages with you. Every one that's not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found to be with me, shall be counted stolen." Laban said, "Good, let it be as you've said." But that day Laban removed the male goats that were striped and spotted and all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white on it and every lamb that was black, and put them in the charge of his sons. And he set a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob. And Jacob pastured the rest of Laban's flock. Then Jacob took fresh sticks of poplar and almond and plane trees, and he peeled white streaks in them, exposing the white of the sticks. He set the sticks that he had peeled in front of the flocks in the troughs, that is, the watering places where the flocks came to drink. And since they bred when they came to drink, the flocks bred in front of the sticks, and so the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted. And Jacob separated the lambs and set the faces of the flocks toward the striped and all the black in the flock of Laban, and he put his own droves apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. Whenever the stronger of the flock were breeding, Jacob would lay the sticks in the troughs before the eyes of the flock that they might breed among the sticks. But for the feebler of the flock, he would not lay them there. So the feebler would be Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. Thus the man increased greatly and had large flocks, female servants and male servants and camels and donkeys. Throughout this section, what you see in Jacob and in his wives is a mixture of good and bad. You know, what you see in them is right thinking and wrong thinking, spiritual thinking and earthly thinking, unrighteous character flaws, and some righteous traits. What you find is a double-mindedness in all of these members of his family. Now, it's not necessarily the way we often think of double-mindedness, is it? When we get into the study of double-mindedness in the scriptures, it's normally described as a competing love for the world and a love for God. One foot in the world, one foot out of the world. It's kind of what we think about when we think of double-mindedness. In this section, what we're seeing is the application of that truth in real life. Right before your eyes, you're seeing how it applies when a woman feels threatened that the other woman is gaining more status. Does she go to the Lord in prayer and wait on the Lord for him to defend her status and her honor? No, she takes matters into her own hands and does it the way the world does it. Jacob, when he feels like he's being cheated by Laban, does he wait upon the Lord and say, Lord, I know you are able to fix this? Or do he take matters into his hands and say, okay, you're going to cheat me, I'm going to cheat you back? What you see is the application of having one foot in and one foot out. And what we're finding in this area is God is correcting and growing and maturing, but he lets us see the process. There's consequences involved. The way that things happen behind this family is, what do we see? We see a family that's dysfunctional. We see a family with jealousies. We see a family that is constantly suspicious of one another. A family who, at some points, hate one another, selfish with one another. Can you imagine the 12 tribes growing up in this household? You see a lot of things that we should take in and say, you know, we have the Holy Spirit in us. We are maturing in our faith. What we see here shouldn't be seen here. And so that's what my hope is today, is that what we see in them is sometimes things we unfortunately see in ourselves, and that we might give it to the Lord even this morning. Last week we saw the Lord had seen Leah and saw that she was unloved. And so he opened her womb. Lord's at work. She had Reuben. And what did she write? She knew that the Lord had seen her situation. And so she named him, see, a son. The Lord has seen. Look, a son. Then what did she say? Now my husband will love me. Next she had Simeon. For the Lord had heard her cry. She called him heard. God heard me. Next, she had Levi attached, thinking, God has given me this son, so surely Jacob and I are going to be attached now. Now this will bring him to me. And next, she had Judah, where she finally took her eyes off of this and said, I'm just going to praise the Lord for Judah. She called him praise. Rachel had not been able to conceive. And we're told in verse 1, she envied her sister. She envied her sister. And beloved, that's one of the key points I want you to understand this morning of envy. Man, it leads us into all kinds of dark places, this idea of envy. And it's a word that we need to understand because we're so prone to it. It seems like you would think that those of us that live here in Redondo, here in this, you know, 21st century, who would we envy? Yet it seems like the more you have, the more you envy. And so what I want to do this morning is open that up to you. There's a difference between envy and jealousy in the scriptures. Do you know that envy is always called out as a sin? You never find a good envy. But jealousy, sometimes there's a good jealousy. There's a good side of jealousy. There's a bad side of jealousy. And I want you to understand the difference. What is envy? It begins with discontent. You're not content with what God has given you. You're not content with what you have. You're not content with the timing that things are going on. You're just not content. You're always pushing God. You're always looking over there, looking over here. It doesn't matter what you have because you want to see what someone else has. And so envy, it begins with discontent. You're not satisfied with what you've been given by God. Discontent then leads to desire. It's not just, what do they have? Once you see that they have something you don't have, now you desire that thing. You have a desire for it. You have a desire for what has not been given to you, but to another. And this desire then leads to resentment and spite for the one who has been given what you desire. Pretty soon you don't like that person that has that thing that you want. And that's when we start talking bad about them. We start pulling them down. We start hitting them. We're told to not covet your neighbor's wife. You know what that's really telling you? Be content with your wife, the wife that God gave you. And it starts with, I'm not content, so I'm looking, well, what does he have? What does he have? And that desire, which is for something that's not yours. And so you start to understand covetousness and envy. It's desiring something that isn't yours, doesn't belong to you, hasn't been given to you. That's the source of envy. It leads to all manner of sins. Covetousness is the opposite of contentedness. Discontent leads to covetousness. I'm dissatisfied with what God's provided for me. Always wanting more. Always watching others to see what you're not getting. You ever feel that? You see it with your kids. Anyone that's had kids, they don't care what piece of cake you got. All they want to see is their brother's piece of cake to see if it's bigger than theirs. The flesh just constantly drives us. Am I getting the short end of the stick? I'm sure that I am. That's our flesh. Jealousy. Jealousy is the desiring and loving what has been given to you so much that you're overly watchful and protective of it so that no one else will take what is yours. You don't want to share what's been given to you. Jealousy, in a good light, we know that our God is a jealous God. Exodus 25, he's jealous for our devotion. He doesn't want us devoted to anyone or anything but him. Why? It belongs to him. It's his. He rightfully owns it. It's not envy because he's not wanting something that doesn't belong to him. This is his. And so he's jealous for what is his. 2 Corinthians 11, he's jealous for our love and faithfulness to his son. Why? He is the rightful owner of your faithfulness and your love. He's jealous for his name, for his glory. He will share it with no other. There's no sharing of his glory. He is jealous for his glory, for his name, for his reputation. Isaiah 42:8, he's jealous for obedience. He's jealous for our worship. He's given us to know him as our God. And he's opened our hearts that we might know him. We belong to him. Understand, he's very jealous every time you give your affection or your heart to anyone or anything else. This is the backdrop of this whole chapter. It all starts with this discontentedness with what God is doing, God's timing, what God is, how he's working in Leah's life versus Rachel's life versus Jacob's life, what he's doing. And what you'll find is everybody in this section is looking to see what the other one has. How am I not getting what I deserve? What's my right? And what's the result? Conflict, lots of destruction, division, strife. We begin in this section with Rachel had not been given children by the Lord, but Leah had. And so she's discontent. It's my right to have babies. I'm his wife. It's my right to have babies. I'm going to have babies. And so what does she have? She has a little bit of a tantrum here. She comes to Jacob, and what we're shown here, God just brings us into view for us to see what this looks like and how it behaves. So she tells Jacob, give me children or I will die. That's the words of a tantrum. You can see it. It's like, I just have to have this or I'm going to die. This is driving me crazy. I'm dying here. Give me children. This is more than just a tantrum. It's an affront to God. What's not acknowledged by Rachel, it isn't Jacob who makes the baby. It's God who's the author of life. He's the one who forms each child in the womb. He's the one that says now, not now. Jacob is correct when he tells her, but do you think that this might be frustrating for him as well? This is his first love. Do you not think he wants a child too? And so he's angry when she says, what are you not doing? Give me children. And so in anger, he tells her, am I in the place of God? Is it me who has kept the fruit of the womb from you, or is it him? What he tells her is right, but husbands, I want you to see something here. What don't you see in his response? Any pastoral care at all. His wife is frustrated, she's sad, she's angry, she's turning away from God. What he should be doing is taking her to the Lord, loving her, showing her kindness and compassion, coming alongside. He doesn't comfort her. What does he do? He heaps onto her. You don't think she already knows this hurt in her heart? You don't already think that every single morning she wakes up, she's saying, why aren't you giving me a child? Is that helpful or hurtful? And so she has a plan. And this tells you how not pastoral he is. Her plan is the very same plan that his grandmother had. Let's help God out. I got an idea. Bilhah's my servant. You go into her, so I will have the status of motherhood. And what are we told? He went in. She's going to be my surrogate. Go into her. She'll give birth on my behalf. I will be a mother too. Do you know what her discontentment did? It blinded her to what she was trading away. She had his heart. And she introduces another woman into the picture because she's blind, because all she can see is what she doesn't have. She can't think about what God has already given to her. She had Jacob's heart. He goes into Bilhah. She conceives and bore them a son. Listen to Rachel's words to see where her heart and mind were. Rachel said, God has, some of your Bibles say, judged, a better word is vindicated me. Judged in my favor. It carries the sense that God has given me my right. That's what that means. I told you I had the right to have a child, and now he's given it to me, and so I've been vindicated. Luther spoke of Rachel, Jacob's wife, it was her right to have his children, so that when her servant delivered the baby, God had judged her to be right and vindicated her. What does she say next? God has heard my voice also. The also kills it. It would have been nice if she had said, God has heard my voice, because that means she had gone to the Lord and said, please, I know you're the giver of life. Give me a child. But it says also. What's that pointing to? Remember the second child that Leah had? God has heard my voice. His name will be heard. Hey, Leah, God has heard my voice also. You start to see this rivalry. You start to see what's happening here. And so she named the child Dan, which means vindicated. I now have what is my right. Bilhah carried another son for them. And you see the flesh motivation's clear because this time she's a little more honest and open. The last time we kind of got the hint, but look at the next one. Her words, woe, with mighty wrestlings, I have wrestled my sister and now I have prevailed. It's not about the children. It's not about bringing in the offspring of Abraham. No, I will best my sister. I'm on the winning side now. There's a contest that's going on between she and Leah. Now, in her estimation, she's winning. I have been wrestling, and now I have prevailed. I'm winning. To commemorate this contest, she named this son Naphtali, which means wrestling. It's my trophy. That isn't about God's promise of offspring at all. It's about her envy. She will secure her status herself. And at the moment, she's winning. Sin always breeds more sin. And now that Rachel is winning, what do you think has happened? She's drawn Leah now into the contest. What is, we find this wrestling for status, it's on. Leah recognizes that she'd stopped having children. So what does she do? She sends Jacob into her servant, Zilpah. Okay. She gave her to him as a wife. This is Leah, who already is sick because her husband doesn't have eyes for her. She brings another woman in. Well, he goes into her. Zilpah produces a son, and Leah names the son. And it's funny, she now has a status. She names him Gad. And it says, look at my good fortune in the Hebrew. Do you know how you can translate it today in our vernacular? Well, looky here. Looky, looky what I have, right? Look at what I've got. That's the name of this son. Looky, looky. Zilpah produced another son for Jacob, and Leah said, I'm happy. She named him Asher. The other ladies called her happy. Why? Because now things have been set right. Her status is secure. She's happy. Back and forth, this rivalry went on, now nearly 7 years. And then we have a break in the story. Reuben, now probably around 7, is out in the field, found some flowers for his mom. He brings the flowers in. These flowers happen to be mandrakes. What's interesting about these flowers is their roots and their fruits. First off, the mandrake, they look like babies. They look like little people. When you pull the roots up, they have two legs that go down like legs. They usually will have two arms. And when you look at them and pull them up, that's why I like in a lot of all the potions and weird things, they have mandrake. But they're fruits, little tiny apples. They're called love apples. Everyone would call them love apples. Why? Because they were part aphrodisiac and part fertility drug. The boy probably didn't know that. He was just getting flowers for his mom. But word got out that the mandrakes were in Leah's possession. Who wants them? Rachel's barren. Everyone at that time knows that mandrakes are aphrodisiac, fertility, everything. I want those mandrakes. She wants those mandrakes bad. Not just because Leah has them, but, hey, these have power to make babies. Rachel wants them. Can you imagine God watching this? Give me some of those mandrakes. I'll do anything for the mandrakes. Rachel asks Leah, please give me some of those mandrakes. Leah's response, it's not enough for you to steal my husband? Now you want the mandrakes my son has brought to me? You want my son's flowers that he brought to me? It's not enough that you have Jacob? You start to see this rift between these sisters. Don't ever forget, these are sisters. Rachel barters, okay, you want Jacob? I'll send him to sleep with you tonight. That's where it tells you, one, she's got control over Jacob. She's the one calling the shots with Jacob. She has the ability to hire him out for the night. And it also tells you where he's normally sleeping. I'll let him sleep at your house tonight. For the mandrakes. Well, these are the family dynamics. So she makes the trade. Verse 16, when Jacob's coming back in from the field that night, can you imagine this? Leah went out to meet him and told him, you're sleeping with me tonight. I paid for you myself. I purchased you for the evening. So he went into her. These are the mothers of God's people, Israel. The story of the 12 sons. Verse 17, we're told that the Lord listened to her. In her heart and her mind, she knew it was the Lord who could help. So she prayed to the Lord for children. And what was Rachel doing here? When you put to this contrast, you can see a little bit more maturity on the older from the younger. She's at least in the midst of this ugliness, praying that the Lord would give her a child. Let this work tonight. Meanwhile, the other one is chopping up the roots and putting it into a tea, and she's drinking the tea, and she's like, this is going to work. Leah conceives and she bears Jacob another son. And what does she name him? God has given me my wages. Yikes. When you go in the languages of Hebrew, this time she refers to God as Elohim. Always before she referred to him as Yahweh. Yahweh, the covenant God, her God. Now he's creator God. It's a little further, it's a little distant. You can see where her heart is by the fact that Elohim. She reports that I gave my servant to my husband, and it was an act of sacrifice on my part, and so now the Lord has rewarded me with this son. God's response to her selflessness, and she calls this son Issachar. This is my due. These are my wages. Later, she conceives again a sixth son she names Zebulun, honor. For God has given me a good endowment, a status that will continue on forevermore. It's a lasting gift. Because of this status, my husband will now honor me. What does that mean? My house will be his dwelling. He will have to come and live here. Why? I'm winning 8-2. I have 8 of his sons. This father's going to live with his sons. This is going to seal it. He will honor me now. And then she conceived again a girl. Her name is Dinah, which means truly vindicated by a higher authority. You thought you were vindicated. Looks like I'm vindicated more. Then in verse 22, God remembered Rachel. What does that mean? It doesn't mean he forgot her. It means his attention now focuses in on her, and we see why. God listened to her. She finally cried out to him. He listened to her. And he answered by opening her womb, and she called her son Joseph. And what's interesting in this name is there's a recognition that this was God's doing. And in doing this, he had removed the stigma on her. Because even though they're fighting for status, she was barren. And in that time, God's not happy with her. This had removed that stigma. And then she named him Joseph. You know what it means? May he also add more. It's a very gentle, may he add more. Now, she recognizes it's God who gives life as he wills. And it seems that God is now working in all of their hearts. We see how he's working these things. And so we see this kind of come to fruition. And so now Joseph is born. And so Jacob, it's time to go. His view is it's time to leave. God has lifted the hand that was on Rachel, and it's now time to go. That's what he thinks. It wasn't time for him to go. There was still more things that God was working on him. So now we turn to him. So I want to quickly look at this last section. I won't go through it. We'll read through it. As soon as Rachel delivered, Jacob's ready to go. He tells Laban, send me away that I may go home on my own, back to my country. 14 years of service. It's been complete. He's no longer under any obligation to Laban. So give me the pink slip. Let me go. And he lets him know that the debt's wholly paid in full. I've been faithful in my service. Laban counters. It shows us a lot about Laban. Give me a chance here to make this up, right? He tells him, if you like me at all, if you have any value for me, just listen for a moment. And then what does he tell him? I have learned through divination. I know things. I have some insights that I've gotten. Divination. You know what divination is, beloved? Divination, in the actual syntax, is he consulted the omens. I've looked at all the signs and I've evaluated, I've got an insight, you should stay. What he's saying, when you look at this, what they do, when you think about divination, it's reading into some form, right? It's some means that you're going to read into and you're going to see the future by looking into it. One of the oldest ancient ones is to read tea leaves. At the end of a tea, there's tea leaves that's like, oh, I can look into there and tell you your future. What's another one? Look at my hand. You can read my hand. And by reading my hand, you can look into the future. Tossing sand into the air, tossing stones into a pond, looking into a clear pond and looking at a reflection. Tarot cards were made so that you can play the tarot cards and read into them. All of these things are divination. It's looking into natural things in some way that you think that you have a special insight. Something has come to you that you're able to see the future. Somehow nature is telling you what's coming. Leviticus 19:26, God forbids this. He forbids the consulting of omens. Don't be looking at signs in nature. Don't be looking at signs in tea leaves. Don't be reading people's palms. Don't be looking at the tarot cards. If you want to know the future, listen to my word. Leviticus 26, if a person seeks out his path from those who consult with divination, God will set his face against them. It will go bad for you. If you're looking for a future from one of those folks, I'll take care of your future. Jeremiah 27:9, God calls on his people to stop turning to diviners. When you get into the prophets, they're saying, you guys keep looking everywhere but me. 1 Samuel says, rebellion is as the sin of divination because it's a rejection of the word of the Lord. You see that? We don't consult with these things because we know that it's God who determines the future. Not nature. For us to go to nature for insights and answers, especially for us with God's word, it's a rejection of him. I know what that says, but I want to know what it says about me. I want to know specifically what's going to happen with me. So I'll tell you, if any of you are dabbling in this or have someone that you consult with, you need to stop. I wouldn't think in 2021 I'd have to say that, but it's been uncovered in the last few weeks. And so stay away from that stuff. If you want to know how the story ends, read the Bible. You want to know what his plan is for you? Read his word. Get close to him. We reject God's word. We listen to creatures and we look into creation when we've been given access to the Creator himself. No wonder he sees rebellion in it. No wonder it is so ugly to him. Laban says, I've been looking into all of the omens, and what I've seen is that I've been able to discern this thing that I have been blessed because you've been here. You see in this strange mix of religion, superstition, that he says, you know, these things have told me that God is blessing you. Do you see that strange mixture? Beloved, that's often us, isn't it? A strange mixture of spiritual and carnal. God was blessing Jacob all right. Laban says, the signs showed me that. But Jacob pokes a hole in Laban's divination. He goes, you yourself know how I served you. I worked hard, and you saw how the livestock fared because of me. And then he says, you had little when I came, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. Everything I touched turned to gold because of him. You don't need these signs to tell you that. You saw it with your own eyes. But now I need the Lord to provide for my household. All of this was for you, and now my family's growing, and I need for the Lord to bless me. Laban asks again, well, then what shall I give you? I love Jacob's correction. You will give me nothing, but this will be the deal that I'll make with you. I will pasture and keep your flock, and in return I'll take only the striped and spotted livestock for myself. Now, what you got to understand is the great majority of livestock were solid. So already he was saying, I'll take the little ones. I'll take the exceptional, right? These are the exceptions to the rule, the spotted and the striped, the multicolored ones. I'll just take those. Jacob trusts the Lord because what does he know? His God is exceptional. He can take those exceptions and get me a whole entire stock. He tells Laban that he'll separate the exceptions from the flock, leaving only the solids. From the solids from here on out, I will pasture those. I'll take care of those. And the multicolored ones and the striped ones and the spotted ones, those are the ones that'll be mine. This would show two things. One, it would show that it was God who gave him the increase. And two, if Laban ever came and said, well, those are mine, he'd say, these are striped, these are mine. Really easy to discern, not trusting Laban. Something as a side note, just for you for fun. All of Jacob's flocks are going to be striped and spotted, but more than that, they're multicolored. They'll have all the different colors, brown and blacks, and all of his are going to be that multicolored. And so when you come to his son Joseph's coat, and we always think multicolored, we're like, well, why is his coat multicolored? Because the sheep that they had were multicolored. And so all of the sheep that were sown, his coat was a coat of many colors. Bible is one story here. Meanwhile, back on the farm, Laban had already separated. When he got this, he told his sons, go get all the striped, all the spotted livestock, get them out of here, and get all the males, every black one, and get them. And he sent them 3 days' journey away. No mixing. Why was he doing that? Because the faster you get them out of the flock, the less chance there's going to be more of that mixing going on. And so what was he doing? He's cheating. Laban is cheating him. He's deceiving him. Okay, sends his sons on the back way, get these out of the way. He's cheating. What's Jacob's response? Lord, you know he's cheating, and so I trust you to do what you need to do. I put my hands in you. I will allow you to defend me. That's the mature Christian. That's not what he does, though, does it? He cheats back. Oh, you're going to cheat me? I'll cheat you. You want to be ugly to me? I'll be ugly to you. You want to do this? I'll show you this. And so they get into this war, right? And so what happens? More superstitions. He takes green branches. He carves white stripes in them. He places them strategically around the flock. They see stripes. They'll make striped babies. It's no different than mandrakes. He puts these striped things around, spits multicolors. What does it tell you when he does that? He's cheating too. And so what you find is he moves from trusting God for the increase to taking matters into his own hands. I'll make sure I get the increase. Not only that, as the flocks increase, look at what he does. He manipulates the outcome so that when the strong and healthy ones are coming to the water hole, put the striped sticks up there. So I'm going to have some really healthy, hearty, strong goats and cattle and all these different things, right? Because that's what I want them to mate. And when all the weak ones come, all the scrawny ones, take the sticks up. That way, I will have the strong, hardy flocks, and he will have the little scrawny, nasty ones. And at the end, what we find? He accumulated large flocks of many strong and hardy striped, multicolored sheep and goats, and Laban's herds, well, they were what they were. Jacob had beat Laban at his own game, fire with fire, cheat by cheat, with no thought of his God, his witness, or God's glory. In verse 43, it says, he burst out, bursting out. He exceedingly exceeding. The sense is that Jacob's wealth expanded exponentially. We'll see that his actions make him now to be an enemy of Laban and his sons. We get in the next chapter, he's going to leave on the run again. On the run again. This chapter is filled with people that God loved and chose to fulfill his promises to Abraham and Isaac. The mothers and the father of this holy nation set apart who would be the apple of God's eye and were shown them in all of their honest, candid truth. Moments of faith and trust, praying to the Lord, acknowledging his providence, yet still mixing it in with world because of discontentment, envy, one-upsmanship, superstition, worldly devices, petty contests, and in its wake, resentments, insecurities, jealousies, ambitions, conflict, broken testimonies. Over and over again, we see the lengths that they take to win, especially when they feel that they're being cheated, especially when they feel that somehow their rights have been overstepped. This is my status, and they cheated, and now they're taking away my status, and so therefore I'm going to go fight in my own way, in my own, I'll take care of this. You just wait a minute. These people are immature in their faith. They're not very well grown in their trust of God. They betray what they know is right in order to win the day, to get their way, because she's doing this, I'm going to do it too. Because he cheated, I'm going to cheat also. They're not trusting in their position and the promises that God had made to them. So this morning as I close, I want to stretch the application just a hair because of the events of this past week. Because of the conversations I've had with several of you, how many of us are feeling this way? It's really easy when you feel like your rights are being overstepped, when you feel like you're being cheated, lied to take matters into your own hands. And what becomes of it? Is God glorified at all? No. Division, chaos, anger, resentment, spite. We're fearful of the outcome if we leave it up to God. God just doesn't know what we know. God just hasn't seen what we've seen, and he doesn't know who we are. He doesn't know what we're supposed to be. God is clueless on this. So I'm going to take matters into my own hands, and I'm not even going to consult with him because I know better than God how to handle everything that's in front of me right now. Beloved, that's dangerous. In chapter 30, we're shown examples of these who are not yet mature in the faith, and they move between a trust in God and a trust in their own ability to make things right. This is where double-mindedness is revealed. This is where the rubber hits the road. James tells us double-minded people are unstable in all their ways. James tells us that when you draw near to God, he draws near to you. Turn with me to 1 Kings 18. 18, verse 21, just one verse. Elijah came near to all the people and he said, "How long will you go limping between two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, well then follow him." It's a question that comes before you every single day. If God is who he says he is, then why are you not trusting in him? Why are you not running to him? Why are you not resting in him? Why have you decided to go in your own way? If this world, right, the prince of this world, if this world is where your answers are, well, then go to the world. But stop going back and forth between the two. Proverbs 25 tells us, "It's like a trampled spring and a polluted well is a righteous man who gives way before the wicked." We're supposed to be wells of living water that are unpolluted. But when we give way in front of the wicked, when we fight their fight with their weapons, when we act like them, we lose high ground, we lose cleanness, this testimony of God's grace in our life. What should they have done? What would one mature in the faith have shown? What would they have done? I think that's something that Jacob and his family are being taught right now in this section. It's something that we need to learn to remember and to put into practice. Psalm 37 is where I close today. Psalm 37, this is David. This is a man who matured in the faith. You know, beloved, what we got to remember? We've got to remember that we are the Lord's children. He sent his son to die on a cross to give you the right to be called his children. And now that you are his children, saved by grace because of his great love for you, he's carrying out his purposes, his way, and in his timing in the world around us. It may not look the way we wish it looked. It may not be going the way we wanted it to go. Did he lose the ball all of a sudden? Oh, got spun out of his hands and he's got to grab hold of it again and get back in the vault? No. Everything taking place right now is just on time, just on plan, just on purpose. Nothing has changed in the church. Not one responsibility that you have has changed from last Sunday to this Sunday. Faith in the Lord. Carry the gospel to this world that needs it. Trust in Him. Pray to Him. Love Him. Delight in Him. David writes a psalm for us. And this is what he tells us. This is our action plan as faithful ones, mature in the faith. Fret not yourself because of evildoers is how it starts. Why are you fretting so? You still live in this world. Did you think it was not sinful? Or did you just get comfortable in the sin? Don't be envious of wrongdoers. Don't want what God hasn't given to you. For they'll soon fade like the grass and wither like the green herb. Trust in the Lord. Do good. Dwell in the land. Befriend faithfulness. Make faithfulness your friend. No matter what happens, I'm faithful to the Lord. I'm going to cry out to Him. I'm going to call to Him. I'm going to testify to Him. I'm going to be an example to others because of Him. Trust in the Lord. Do good. Dwell in the land. Befriend faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord. When you delight yourself in the Lord, when He is your contentment, when He is everything to you, He gives you the desires of your heart. Loves to. When you're wanting the right things, they're yours. Commit your way to the Lord. Make a commitment. Trust in Him. He'll act. He'll bring forth your righteousness as the light, your justice as the noonday. So be still before the Lord. Wait patiently for Him. Shut your mouth once in a while and listen to Him. Be quiet before Him. Don't tell Him what He needs to do. How about you be quiet and let Him tell you what He needs you to do? Fret not yourself over the one who prospers in his way, over the man who carries out evil devices. Refrain from anger. Forsake wrath. Revenge, anger, look what we can do. We can crash through doors. We can break windows too. The evildoers shall be cut off. Those who wait for the Lord shall inherit the land. In just a little while, the wicked will be no more. Though you look carefully at his place, he won't be there. The meek shall inherit the land, and they'll delight themselves in abundant peace. The wicked plots against the righteous, gnashes his teeth at him. But the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he sees that his day is coming. The wicked draw the sword, bend their bows to bring down the poor and needy, to slay those whose way is upright. We will silence them. We'll go after them. We'll find each one of them and root them out. Their sword will shatter their own hearts, and their bows shall be broken. Better is the little that the righteous has than the abundance of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken. The Lord upholds the righteous. The Lord knows the days of the blameless, and their heritage will remain forever. They're not put to shame in evil times. Man, isn't that something? Don't we want to be a people who are not put to shame in evil times, that we can stand firm as Christians? We haven't bent. Your days of famine, they have abundance. The wicked will perish. You image the Lord like the glory of the pastures. They vanish like smoke, vanish away. The wicked borrows, doesn't pay back. It's coming. The righteous is generous and gives. For those blessed by the Lord shall inherit the land, but those cursed by him shall be cut off. The steps of a man are established by the Lord when he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be cast headlong, for the Lord upholds his hand. I've been young and now I'm old, and I've not seen the righteous forsaken or his children begging for bread. He's ever lending generously, and his children become a blessing. So turn away from evil, do good, and so shall you dwell forever. The Lord loves justice. He will not forsake his saints. They're preserved forever. The children of the wicked shall be cut off. The righteous shall inherit the land and dwell upon it forever. The mouth of the righteous utters wisdom, and his tongue speaks justice. The law of his God is in his heart. His steps don't slip. The wicked watches for the righteous and seeks to put him to death. The Lord will not abandon him to his power or let him be condemned when he's brought to trial. So wait for the Lord and keep his way. He will exalt you to inherit the land. You will look on when the wicked are cut off. I've seen a wicked, ruthless man spreading himself like a green laurel tree, but he passed away, and behold, he was no more. Though I sought him, it couldn't be found. Mark the blameless and behold the upright, for there's a future for the man of peace. Transgressors shall all be destroyed, altogether be destroyed. The future of the wicked shall be cut off, but the salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. He's their stronghold in the time of trouble. The Lord helps them and delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked and saves them. Why? Because they take refuge in Him. Rachel, when she wanted children, instead of taking matters into her own hands and grabbing her servant saying, I want children and I want them now, should have gone into her closet and just said, Lord, you've given me my husband's love. It's enough. What you've given me, I will delight in. Leah when she was attacked by her sister and all of a sudden saw it was a contest, instead of joining in the fight, she just said, "Lord, I'm staying out of the fight. I'm just going to trust you. Give me what I need. You know my status. You've heard my voice. I trust you." Beloved, we as a people, just like all of those folks in this story, need to mature in our faith. We need to trust him more, not get so fretted up. Our God is still on the throne. He reigns today. He loves you. He's working out his purposes in your life. Put your faith in him, or put your faith in the world.